T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Hello there. Welcome, everyone. This is Rob V. Lowe, the leader and founder of Success Superpowers, the host of the Inside Your Superhero radio show, coming to you today with what I would have to say is an outstanding guest to be privileged to interview. I have probably only met Penn this year, haven't met Penn in person yet, but we've been, connected in the online world for some time through a great peer of ours, and I've followed the journey that Penn, and I will say that she takes every day, because this person is just doing something every day that is out there serving the world with, I would have to say, with everything you have, Penn. Is that right?
Absolutely. Very determined and very passionate.
And look, we had a chat pre our show, and one of the things I really have come to appreciate you is this wisdom you have around your personal success and how you've built yourself as a person. And that's what I'd love to explore today with you. And I think that the best way to begin this is just, would you mind sharing with the audience a little bit about the story of Penn?
Mm-hmm. Certainly. I guess the start of my story goes all the way back to my primary school, but sitting or standing at where I am now, if you had asked me when I was younger if I would be where I am today, I probably think I would have laughed. Mm-hmm. I didn't dream of doing or being anything this exciting, but I am here. And what I want other women to know and other men to know is that they can certainly be here too, with hard work, dedication and passion.
What did you think?
Sorry?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask. I'm just curious. Penn, the primary school girl, what was she thinking she would be doing?
When I was younger, I wanted to be an astronaut, a ballerina, or a firewoman. And if someone was able to combine all three of these into one role, I would quite happily have volunteered to be the prototype. But clearly I'm not a ballerina, as I'm about as dainty and subtle as a train smash.
Yep.
The moon is too far away for my liking, and now I just prefer to buy the fireman's calendar every year than actually be one. So clearly none of these career paths worked out for me, but what I did very quickly realise is I wanted to be with people and I wanted to lead.
Yeah, so I think what you were identifying for yourself by the sounds of it to me is you wanted to be a superhero, because you had to be three people.
You know, absolutely.
Three careers. So obviously you're destined to be a superhero in this world, And it sounds by all means that you've got there. So cool. So Penn didn't dream of what you were, and you want people to appreciate that if they see it, if they dream it, they can chase it. Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's very clear these days that some of the roles that we will be undertaking don't actually exist now. Because of the digital disruption and the emerging technology in the current world that we live in, there are things that we can't even dream of that will be available in the next 5, 10, 20 odd years. So all I tell people is to, one, find what you're passionate about. Find something you want to be dedicated to. And secondly, if you don't know what you want to do right now, undertake short courses, do little bits of training, and gain experience through trialing different jobs to find what you're good at and what you enjoy. There is no right or wrong answer in determining what your future career path is.
Yep.
Much like me, it was trial and error.
Yep.
So find what you love and what you dedicate yourself to, because if you're going to spend a minimum of 8 hours a day working at a job, you have to enjoy it.
Would it be fair to say, though, that in some respects there was some indication about Penn, the primary school girl, like there's something that sits within us as a child that probably can guide our passion and our purpose, and the short courses, and I love those things, you know, get variety in your life, see what fits you, not necessarily try to fit to something. I think that's a great, you know, a great analogy of life. We often try and we see the pigeonhole and we often try and shape ourselves to fit in it. And then when we don't understand why. So do you think it's possible that, you know, there's things that you experienced as a child which have later in life come to be your passion?
Absolutely. One of the things I always say is choose your parents and your family carefully. And I know we can't do that as children. So it's important is to understand what the lessons your parents are trying to teach you mean to you. So what they model and what they demonstrate to their children is one of the strongest lessons that children will learn and they will continue to learn them growing up. So both of my parents were highly successful in very different fields and in their own ways.
Yep.
The second part of it is when I joined school, I joined with my twin sister, Gemma, and my elder sister, Cassie, was a couple of years above me. And both of these girls were also very, very determined.
Yep.
So I learnt to be competitive, and that was a byproduct of being the twin and the sister of two other high-achieving women.
Yep.
So, and when I say being competitive, it wasn't competitive in a negative way. It was constantly being able to push each other to be the biggest and the best we can be.
Yep.
And throughout schooling years, I developed a thirst for learning. If I wasn't learning or making myself bigger and better, I would become complacent. And that's the worst thing that I could do.
Yep.
So I loved things like English and information technology and business principles. And these were my favourite subjects. Mm-hmm. But I did also enjoy other subjects because of the enthusiastic teachers that I encountered. So the schooling's part of any person's upbringing, as well as the people who are inherent within their upbringing, have a huge role to play on what that person turns out like at the end of the day.
Yeah, look, I just love what you just said then about that you grew to be a learner.
Yes.
But, I mean, we always come across people in the world who have, I guess, a representation of themselves where they don't think they can learn anything new. They don't think that they can be educated. They don't think that they have the intelligence to be educated or to learn something. What do you think I hold to be true no matter what, and I guess that is a belief, that everyone can actually take on education. I think we actually set ourselves up. We condition ourselves because somewhere in our history we've had a role model that says, no, you can't learn that, Rob. You'll never actually learn that. You'll never get to do that. And so it's just been seeded, isn't it? How do you think we could help people maybe step over that? What would be something you would share?
I think the first piece is to break down the stigma that's attached to formal education and learning. One of the things that I do in my current role, and I'm very privileged to be able to do that, is provide training and upskilling opportunities to disadvantaged people. So that's your long-term unemployed, your Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander groups, your females, your mature age job seekers and other people like that. So we provide them dedicated training in certificate 2, 3 or 4. Yep. And we then subsequently place them into employment so that they can then gain experience in using what they've just learned.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say, if you don't know what you want to do, just find something that looks interesting and it can also be educational and fun. What we don't realise is that everything we do every single day is a form of learning.
Yep.
So just by crossing the road,
yeah,
we are undertaking an element of risk management. We are looking left and we are looking right to make sure we don't get hit by a car.
Yep.
And we do exactly the same thing in our day-to-day lives as well as our careers. And one of the things I do when I build a team around me, I make sure that they are bigger and better than I am. I don't pretend to be or have all of the answers. I surround myself with subject matter experts so that I can continue to grow.
Yep.
And it's not necessarily a dedicated formal path. I don't come out with a bachelor degree or a certificate, but I know as a human and in an experiential way, I am still learning.
Well, so it's about... you are doing a bachelor. You're doing a PhD, and I say this with tongue in cheek to people, but I mean it seriously. You're doing a PhD of life. you know.
Yes, absolutely. That's a brilliant way of putting it.
You know, that's what we're here. We're all to become a doctor of our own life. And you know, we could all write a thesis on ourselves if we sat down and had the time and or set aside the time. And some people do this, and it's called a biography.
Absolutely.
Know? And so I think I just love the way that you've shaped that about, you know, we are always learning. And I think that, you know, I see that as maybe a good thing that we take to people in the world that feel that they can't get themselves into the realm of what we have determined in this world as formal learning, ways to learn new skills, mm-hmm. knowledge and information, is if we actually say, well, you're already doing it. And so there's nothing yep. that you need to do differently other than taking this statement about X, and we'll talk about it, and we'll talk about examples of how you can apply it to the world and why, mm-hmm. and then you can just go out and do that little bit. I think that's a really cool way of looking at it, Pam.
And it's really important that you try and enjoy everything you do and you learn from every experience and every exposure to different cultures and ways of thinking.
Yep.
So you have to make yourself think about what you're experiencing so that you're always aware and you are always learning about how you can react or respond differently to different types of situations.
Yep.
And at the end of it, you analyze and learn from it, whether it was good or bad. So it's a positive learning, both experience or life skill, as well as being able to continue and grow as a person.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's, again, the black and the white, the right and the wrong, the good and the bad is for me, it's a conditioning that we've been told that we must have in our life, that we must see things as right and wrong, good and bad. And I'm talking about experiences with our own growth, not necessarily how mm-hmm. we... Yeah, the things, you know, the events that happen in the world, because there are things that happen in the world which are bad. Yes, clearly. But if you keep shaping the good and bad about yourself and your own experience, then if you can't accept it, I mean, for me, I encourage people to substitute with, you know, I had a bad experience. I said, well, no, you had a learning experience.
Absolutely.
You know, there's nothing bad about it. It's you got it shaped that because it didn't go the way that you expected it to go, that you were living with this expectation that it hasn't achieved that, therefore it's bad. No, it's just you've learned. You know.
Absolutely agree. And one of the things I tell my staff is I would rather you make a huge mistake that I then have to apologize to my board for than actually not trying at all.
Yeah.
Try something different, be innovative, but learn from the experience.
That is great. I think 1,000 people have just signed up to wanting to work in your organisation just with that one
Brilliant.
I don't think you'll have any problem with recruitment, Pim, because if your organisation holds that value, that is brilliant. And it's absolutely brilliant because I think the way that we've shaped our organisations over the history, we've shaped them to actually not do that. You know, we've actually conditioned people that you cannot be innovative, and then mm-hmm. when we ask for innovation, we wonder why we don't get it.
Absolutely. And the two buzzwords at the moment is one is innovation and the other piece is collaboration.
Yep.
And they're two elements in business that people actually don't know how to do, mm-hmm. or if they do, they don't know how to do it well and bring others along on the journey.
Well, it's because the muscle is so weak. It hasn't been used for such a long time. We've got to be fair and do the sets and reps about, you know, it's almost a re-education, a reset of people how to be an innovative thinker. It's almost mm-hmm. A reset of how you actually share and work to a cause that's beyond just you. You know, you know, I'm talking about in an organisational work sense. When I work with entrepreneurial people who are out there carving their own paths and don't really work for an organisation, the conversation is different because they see the world in with a different lens. But when you're inside, everyone always seems to be fighting with each other, competing with each other for the next role, the next this, the next that. And that has really, you know, been the cause to the death of collaboration, because we don't feel that we can help each other, because I might help you, Pen, and then we're going for the same job, and then I'm going, but I helped you, you know, and you get the job and I've helped you. That's just not fair. We just don't see collaboration in the pure sense that we should. That's brilliant.
And I need to actually trademark. I need to trademark this, but I firmly believe that there's two types of people in the world. So there's a drawbridge people, and then there's Rapunzel people. So yep. The drawbridge person walks across the bridge and they've finally made it in the pinnacle of their career.
Yep.
So they've reached their heights, they've finally achieved all of their goals, everything. But the problem yep. is they pull the bridge up after them and they yep. ensure that no one else can follow in their footsteps. Alternatively, the Rapunzel people let every single person climb up their hair but go above and beyond them to make sure that they can empower and advance yep. other people to be the biggest and the best they can be. So the one thing that I hope, if I leave a legacy at all, it will be that I am known as a Rapunzel person rather yep. than a drawbridge person.
Yeah, you're here to raise people up.
That's it.
Yeah, not raise up bridges behind you. Raise people to be above. Yeah, it's not even to go above you. It's just to raise them to be that purpose that you may have helped and other people may have helped unlock in their life, and then you're just supporting and facilitating their progress to achieve that, and then think beyond that, and then think beyond that again. And that's something I love doing with the clients that I work with. Pen is they say, well, what happens when I get to this level, Rob? And I said, well, you'll know what to do next because you've already got
absolutely. And you do it within your own mentoring and coaching and with your clients. It's about understanding that the sky's the limit. Whatever you can dream, you can do.
I like to go to the universe. We can go through the sky.
There you go.
It's infinite. I think there's infinite possibilities in this world.
Didn't NASA just discover 12 new planets that are like Earth anyway?
I don't know. I don't follow the media that much, but if they did, awesome. Yeah. I'm on the first rocket ship there. I want to go and check them out.
Good.
Very good. Wow. There's quite a bit there that we've just put together for the audience. There's a lot of things, and I just made some notes as I was going along, as I do, because I want to make sure we come back to a couple of things. In our pre-talk, we really did have a great discussion about your family support, and mm-hmm. it's something I'd really love you to talk a little bit more about today. Is I guess how you came about with you as a person about being, or what is it? Probably the first one I'll say is, what is it that you think was about your family that allowed you to reach out with such conviction?
My family and I have always been incredibly close. Even to this day, we catch up on a weekly basis, and if we can't physically see each other, we are Skyping, we are calling each other each day. They literally are, in the true sense of the word, my best friends as well as my family. So I'm very lucky in that respect. But to be successful these days, I believe strongly in the concept of needing a tribe. And I do overuse the word tribe, but it's because I believe so strongly in it. So if you believe that it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a tribe to produce a successful and well-balanced business person. Yeah. And that's where my network of people who offer me unqualified support and affection, and secondly, a safe haven when I'm faltering under pressure, or even a non-judgmental arena to vent my frustrations and challenges, that's what they provide to me. And my family are an integral part of that.
So you've had that role model, Pen. Do you think that, you know, you talk about this tribe and it sounds to me like you've taken what you've seen, and I don't think it's by luck at all, Pen, that you've got that connection with your family. I think what people don't do enough of is they don't do the work. You've still got to do the work in family. You've still got to...
Yes.
It's not luck. You guys put in work. So that's why you have yes. what you have. And I think it sounds like to me you've kind of taken that model that you've experienced there in family, and you go, well, how can I duplicate this in the business world or in my world as a career? Is that right?
Absolutely. And it's my tribe is full of personal and professional relationships. So my personal side are my confidants, so my friends and my family.
Yep.
But my professional side are my mentors and my coaches. And they've been central to my learning, my growing, and me becoming more effective in my job. And I believe that mentoring and coaching is another essential element to support career development and progression.
Yep. Yeah, we always, I mean, I think, you know, I would say in the olden days, we did this so much better. We just don't do it now. I mean, the word apprenticeship now is just it's just a path to a job. Whereas an apprenticeship in the days when I kind of grew up, you know, and earlier, like if you go back 60s, 70s, 80s, an apprenticeship was you got a schooling in life. You know, you got a mentor for life. You just didn't get a mentor to show you how to do a job. They were your life mentor.
Absolutely.
And I was I've been very fortunate, but not fortunate. I mean, I've seeked out the people to add value in my life, similar to what you've done. And there's a couple of people that just really stand out for me that have been with me for so many years. And I'm talking probably now 20 odd years. I've had the same mentor in my life. You know, it's and without that, like I've pretty much been doing the apprenticeship of life under this person. And I think that that's just so key. I love the message that you're sharing with people. So, how do we get to the how here? How do you think that you can share with people? How do you do this? You know, someone's going to come up and say, "Pen, how have you made this tribe? How have you produced this? You know, what tips can we give them?"
The first tip is to understand that in any person's life, you have to realize that there will be some toxic people. And that can be anyone. That can be, for some people, their family, or that can be a friend. And it's not to say walk away from them, because they're obviously in your life for a reason. But if you do believe that they are toxic, don't, or simply limit your exposure to them. So I have one person in particular who is toxic in my life, and I simply just limit my exposure to them, but I don't want them to be cut out of my life completely. That's my first point. The second point is understand if you're going to seek advice and guidance in a professional manner from a coach or a mentor, sit down and understand what you want to achieve out of that relationship. So write down the key subjects and topic areas that you want guidance and assistance on. Understand how often you actually want to meet with them, and a number of other things. But the last part is to also realize that the person you go to has the right to say yes, but also no. If they say yes, it's then about realizing they are giving up their time to assist you. So when they do help you, they will be providing you frank and honest feedback. It is not about saying I'm bigger and better than you. It is simply a provision of guidance. So choose your coaches and mentors carefully. Lastly, make sure that out of any of those tribe persons, you are benefiting from the relationship. There is give and take in any relationship. You must be able to receive as well as give something back.
Yeah, actually, I just put a post about that on Facebook yesterday about relationships, about they must be positive, purposeful, productive, and profitable. And profitable is in the sense that it adds value to your life. It's not about money. Money's part of it, but so it's adding value to your life. Can I just go back to the toxic person thing? I really love this one because I'm so interested in it and how we... I guess when I see this, and I say this with all respect to our listeners, when you arrive at a level in your life where your conscious awareness is extremely heightened, you do see the world differently than what you did before. And I can definitely say I've spent the last 5 years working out how to arrive there, and I've probably been in that space for the last couple of years and still building. And I feel, Pen, that you've kind of arrived there as well. In your way, your journey has arrived you there. You're a very conscious person. You're very aware of what's going on. So this conversation about the toxic people in our world, and I see them, I probably meet them weekly because I have a lot of conversations in the business that I do. I agree with limiting your exposure, but there is this part of me, this big part of my heart that says, how can I help them? So at what point do you, I think there's a point when you can build yourself and this is the way I want to get your thoughts on this. I'm going to give you what I think. I think there's a way that you can build yourself to a level where you are ready to go and have that conversation. Do you think that that's something that you can do?
Yes and no. Particularly if the toxic person is constantly taking, I do have to limit my exposure, because if I'm not getting anything back in return, mm-hmm. I am expending energy for no praise and no thanks. So I do limit it in that way. But if I'm going to help anyone, my first rule is they must be willing to help themselves first.
Okay.
If they have a willingness and a dedication to be bigger and better, and they want my help to do so, I will more than happily be involved in that. But mm-hmm. if it's simply just leveraging me, my relationships, my network, or whatever, and they come to me and say they want to achieve A, B, and C, but they're not willing to work towards achieving it, I'm sorry, I won't take that on, because that will be me expending energy for a useless or a worthless purpose.
Do you think it's, I can see that, and I've certainly seen that play out in my life as well a couple of times. Do you think that people are not competent in how to reach out? And because I kind of get this as something that I see in the people that are the takers of life, that they're just not competent. They actually haven't learnt how to reach out in an effective way. And this is why I always ask, how can I help them again? You know, because I see this happening. I see them trying. And all they're doing is creating havoc, that feeling of havoc in my life. And then I go back again and I start asking questions around their competency, and start looking, getting them to look back into what events have happened in their life, which have shaped them to the way they are today. Because I think that we can, there's a few levels here. I think we can manage the toxic people in our life, limiting our exposure. We can improve those who want to be improved. And then there's almost the next level of people, of those who don't even know that they need to improve. How do we help them? You know, you might think, where does it stop? I think if we're out here to do the big purpose, serve people the best we can, I think sometimes I'd like to get your insight in how do we go to that very bottom level, the people that are just almost ignorant to the fact that that's how they show up.
Yeah. For me, the first thing I do is engage with people who I believe are falling by the wayside or could be better, mm-hmm. but don't see how they can be.
Yep.
So for me, it's about the engagement. And the second piece is communicating with influence. And that is using positive reinforcement, understanding their previous or historical context of why they are where they are now, but turning that around so they can use it as a learning mechanism.
Cool.
Most of the people that I come to talk with, I sit there and I think it's much like the glass half empty, half full. Mm-hmm. I'm very much a half full person.
Yep.
I try to see the positive in everything and anything I do.
Yep.
And I try to make sure that the people that I talk to, engage with, coach and mentor, understand the same thing. Because we know that in every single thing we do, there's risks, but there's also, and that's obviously very negative, but we can also look at things in a positive risk way, and that's what's called an opportunity. So it's about understanding and letting people realize that with risk, there is also opportunity, and it's what you take to that table and how you deal with it that provides that opportunity to the individual.
Awesome. I think that's a really fitting way to, I guess, end that little part of our conversation, I think. And the other thing I kind of think is, no one shows up to be toxic. You know, they don't necessarily show up with that intention. It just happens to be that that's how they appear in life. And I think a lot of people are just unaware of it. And then they get a bit frustrated, probably even sad about the fact that no one's listening or no one's participating with them and things like that. And, you know, and I think that's where you and I, people in this sort of, you know, where we've raised ourselves to and where we want to raise others to, I think that's sometimes our greatest opportunity is to help that person that's probably been really hard on themselves and as a result of that, they just don't show up with the brilliance that they have.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think you've given so much to the audience, Penn, about creating personal success. I just want to finish with, in the pre-talk we had, you shared with us this line that, I don't know if you remember it, I'm going to see how if it resonates with you. You shared that every breakdown is a breakthrough.
Can be a breakthrough, yep.
Can you just give the audience maybe a couple of minutes on what is that, where did that come from and what does it mean for you?
I first learned that, unfortunately, the hard way. Before my current position, I was in the Australian Defence Force, and I was asked to do a couple of things, which I did at the time, but obviously didn't sit well with me once I left. And I remember returning home after a notably stressful term at sea, and I fell into my parents' arms and I just released all of the emotions I'd kept bottled up for weeks. I was a fully grown woman who drove warships for a living, and I was reduced to a blubbering mess at the sight of people who, to me, were warm and caring and were not going to make any demands on me emotionally or physically.
Yep.
So, again, that's where my tribe came in handy. Yep. And that's where I learned very quickly that a breakdown can become a breakthrough. So I learned not to be afraid of my emotions, mm-hmm. but I had to pick and choose my time and place to show them.
Yep.
I now always show pleasure and I show delight and gratitude, and I am very happy to applaud others' successes. Yep. But I'm also very aware of emotions which can be misinterpreted by other people in the audience.
Yep.
And that's when my tribe and my family can be a great sounding board for me to vent my frustration, anger, disappointment, which may not be appropriate to demonstrate in a professional environment.
Yep.
So for me, using things as a breakdown, but again, reinforcing that everything, you can see things as half empty or half full.
Yep.
To me, the breakdown was negative. Mm-hmm. But it was also a breakthrough for me to realize that I can be strong and I can use my emotions and every single experience I've gone through as a learning mechanism, and that was the breakthrough.
I love that, because I love the line that I use in my life is that, you know, and I say he as in inclusive, but it's just the way it comes out, that he who is fallible always wins. Because when people see the rawness of you, that's what they want to see. They don't want to
absolutely
see the cloak. So brilliant. Thank you for sharing that. I've got to say, this was my last radio show for the year. And every show has been amazing, and you've just kept that theme of amazement going. I've interviewed some brilliant people, and you've certainly kept up that standard, Penn, and I wholeheartedly thank you for that. And I hope my audience has really enjoyed your insight, your passion, and I really believe that they'll feel your energy through the headphones.
Perfect.
And, great show. Thank you very much.
No problems. Thank you very much for having me, Rob.
You're welcome. Just hang on the line, and I just want to do a quick sum up with you.
Sure.
I've got a person in...
I can do anything, I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want, I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.